Promotion to Manager of New Citibank Branch in Hometown Düsseldorf, 1968, at age 32. Driven by Hans von Pfluger, Citibank expanded its corporate business. This could not be done effectively just from Frankfurt. As a result, we opened a branch in my de facto hometown of Düsseldorf, only 25 miles from Mülheim. In May 1968, I was appointed manager of the new branch, which officially opened on Monday, November 11th, 1968. That is an important day in Düsseldorf because on that day, at 11:11 in the morning, is the official beginning of the carnival season, Mardi Gras. I was appointed branch manager 6 months prior to the opening because the manager is responsible for everything concerning that branch. This begins with finding appropriate office space, which had to be on Düsseldorf's prestigious Königsallee, briefly called the Kur. I succeeded in kicking out American Express on the ground floor and three additional tenants on the floor above to create the total space needed for our purposes. I also hired an architect to oversee the project. This was Mr. Peelen, who took a personal interest in me and trying to teach me something about art. He took me to a gallery where we bought two paintings by the same our artist. Both paintings were called Creation Day, but one painting depicts that event as a Big Bang and the other one as Evolution. I bought the Evolution piece for myself and the Big Bang piece for the bank to be hung in my office. I am an idea man and liked this Big Bang idea for my office. When I left Düsseldorf for New York 18 months later, my direct reports bought that painting from the bank at book value and gave it to me as a farewell gift. I also had to hire staff. I moved a few key people from Frankfurt to Düsseldorf. They were Werner Pingo Kaiser, who did an outstanding job in operations, back office, and resource management. I also brought with me Martin Maus as your deputy and Dr. Holger von Pauke, a very incoming young Kandon. The 23 local people so that the branch opened with a total staff of 27, all serving with an average age of 26. I was 32 at the time.
My housing needs were easier to solve than 8 years earlier in Frankfurt. As branch manager, I was entitled to a bank house. I found an appropriate house in a nearby suburb named Hörsel, which the bank allowed me to buy for the bank and renovate so that it was suitable for entertaining customers. I joined the local tennis club and immediately in 1969 won the club championship. I also was given a chauffeur-driven Mercedes. The driver, Herr Goebel, drove me to the bank and to customers. In addition, he did all sorts of zhings, from driving my mother when she visited me to buying Rav meat for Iroh, the German shepherd with a perfect pedigree that I had bought when son Ralph was born on August 8th of 1968. Then I joined Citibank in 1960 and met branch manager Harold Svensson. I set my goal: to become manager of my own branch. 8 years later, I had reached that goal. Michelangelo said, "The real danger is not to set lofty goals and miss them, but to set low goals and reach them." In retrospect, my goal had been set too low. A 6-foot man standing at the beach can see the horizon 10 miles away. That is how far most people zhink and plan. There are another 12,000 miles beyond the horizon before we begin to come back to ourselves again. That is the point one should aspire to explore and reach. I had set my goal to reach the visible horizon. One more unusual, very profitable money market transaction. Again, in 1968, there was major pressure on the German mark to revalue. The Germans resisted that pressure because an upvalued mark would make German goods more expensive for foreigners to buy. That is, an upvalued mark would hurt German exports and cost jobs. As in 1961, foreigners bought marks and deposited them with banks in Germany. This further fueled the German economy, which the German central bank and government did not like. This situation ended with the implementation of very effective capital import controls, prohibitively high reserve requirements, with substantial penalties for banks in Germany that accepted deposits from foreigners. Against that background, the German central bank increased interest rates inside Germany to 10% in order to cool down the economy. Foreigners still wanted to buy and hold marks, but could no longer deposit them inside Germany. They had to find takers of those marks outside Germany. Their interest rates dropped to -10%. This is a situation where the bank charges the depositor 10% for accepting and holding the depositor's money. For example, when a customer makes a one-year deposit of 10 million at -10%, the customer receives at the end of the year only 9 million back from the bank. Such a situation is referred to as negative interest rates.
Peter Klotsch was a trader at Citibank Frankfurt. Here is his letter for my 75th birthday.
When I was looking for a job after 18 months in Geneva as a trainee in one of these wonderful private banks in Switzerland, Heinz, who then was the sovereign under Mr. Harold Svensson, manager of the First National City Bank of New York's first German branch, interviewed me. This was in 1962. I was hired. For 10 years after this great and important moment in my life, I was trained and motivated by Heinz. But maybe more important, I was always thoroughly impressed and to some extent influenced by him as a shining example, by his style to think, to walk, to handle problems and to handle people. He has been, and I dare say at any moment, day and night, on the job or in private life, the only rational, analytical, unemotional, and consequently successful and good-humored money trader I have ever met in my life. He never grieved over bad deals. Bad deals simply taught him to be better the next time. He never vented to impress colleagues, business partners, or anybody else in order to appear important. He never imposed his views on others, and as a matter of fact, this was usually unnecessary because Heinz had a way to set forth his well-considered arguments before his interlocutors that they simply adopted his views as theirs. Heinz wanted to be factually right because this was his way and the way to make money for the bank. Heinz always listened modestly and carefully to anyone when he felt there was whatsoever to learn. He thought every information rough. He never forgot anything, and parallelly, he drew the fastest appropriate rational conclusions you could have experienced with anyone. He would sometimes sit unpretentiously in the back office of his trading room and ask a clerk for explanations. He listened carefully without commenting the handling of the operations. But while walking back to his chair, he knew already how to speed up the processing or enhance its efficiency, and he would soon after implement the better system. Heinz had a way to break up the most complicated nexus into a number of simple facts so that everybody would understand. Of course, I could continue my song of praise, because there are enough examples to compel anybody's admiration for Heinz. But today, I rather tell you one of my fondest moments with him. It was a silent one, and he was not even around. He signed a letter to me by writing, "Your friend Heinz." I felt knighted. "Happy birthday, Heinz, from your friend Peter." Munich, May 11th, 2006.
This Peter Klotsch, Fritz Menzel and myself carefully studied the small print of the 28-page book stipulating reserve requirements. There it stated right on the first page, "Reserve requirements apply to deposits up to 4 years." This was followed by 27 pages of details regarding the percentage of reserves to be kept on demand deposits, savings deposits, time deposits of differing lengths, smaller banks and bigger banks, etc. The key was that when the deposits were for periods longer than 4 years, there were no reserves required. Voila! That was the answer. So Citibank Germany contracted with Citibank branches outside Germany, mainly London and Brussels, revolving term loan agreements for 49 months, where the interest period could be reset at Citibank Germany's option any time between 1 and 6 months. This effectively allowed Citibank Germany to take money from outside Germany at minus 10% and lend it inside Germany at plus 10%. We did this business for several hundred million marks and made a very substantial profit. Preparing for visit of Ed Thorne, head of Citibank Europe. As head of Europe, Ed Thorne was my big boss. He traveled with his wife, whose grandparents were born in Cologne. They were scheduled to visit Frankfurt, take the train from Frankfurt to Mainz, and continue by boat on the Rhine from Mainz to Koblenz, looking at the castles on top of the Vineyard Mountains. From there, they would take a train from Koblenz to Cologne, where they wanted to look at the famous 700-year-old Cologne Cathedral. My driver, Herr Goebel, would pick them up in Cologne and bring them to Düsseldorf, leaving nothing to chance. Everything was planned to the single minute and slightest detail. Ingrid went to Frankfurt ahead of time and took the exact trip the way the Thorns would do it a few weeks later. They wanted to make sure that enough time had been allocated for the transfers from train to boat and from boat to train. An English-speaking guide at the Cologne Cathedral was identified and hired for the specific time and day of the Thorns' visit, and generously pre-tipped. The guide actually gave the tour to Ingrid so that she could verify that the guide was indeed outstanding. Life at Citibank Düsseldorf branch, 1969. The total staff grew from the original 27 to about 75 at the end of 1969. We were all relatively young Germans and had a lot of fun. By mid-1969, the Düsseldorf branch made more money than the Frankfurt branch. Again, my competitive ego was satisfied.
Performance and fun at my Düsseldorf branch. The headquarters for Lufthansa were in Cologne and, as such, located in the German state of North Rhine-Westphalia. Lufthansa was recreated when Germany became a sovereign state again in 1949. The management of Lufthansa went to Citibank New York and negotiated a large loan which would enable Lufthansa to purchase a startup fleet of commercial aircraft. Part of the deal was an unconditional guarantee of the German government. However, the last signature needed for the loan to become effective was from the chairman of Citibank's Credit Policy Committee. He demanded that in addition to the government guarantee, there also had to be a guarantee from the German central bank. He argued that in Germany, the central bank is independent. As such, if they did not make available the dollars to pay back the dollar-denominated loan, the guarantee of the government was useless. This was 1949, and Germany and its currency, the mark, were just evolving from the ashes. This additional request for a central bank guarantee was too much for the leadership of Lufthansa. They took the entire loan agreement, lock, stock and barrel, to Chase Manhattan Bank and borrowed the money from them. However, Chase also put into the agreement their right of first refusal for any banking business Lufthansa might want to do in the future. During the 1960s, I had called on Lufthansa's finance chief, Herr Geber, many times along with Hans von Pflüge and the head of our transportation department in New York. We had come up with very creative aircraft financing, but Mr. Geber always referred to the right of first refusal of Chase, and no business was done. 1 year before I opened the Dusseldorf branch, I took Mr. Geber to lunch at Die Bastei, a fancy restaurant in Cologne. Herr Geber liked oysters, and I arranged with the head waiter to put a pearl into one of the oysters to be served to Mr. Geber. He was delighted to find the pearl, and I told him that it was a sign from higher powers that he should do business with me. Finally, on the opening day, November 11th, 1968, of my new branch, I phoned Geber and told him, "Today is the first day of my new branch in Dusseldorf. I have reserved account number 1 for Lufthansa. This reservation expires at noon today." After that, I hung up to avoid any discussion. I was speculating that he was vain enough to fall for my little game. And it worked. About 1 hour later, he called and opened an account with 1 million marks in it. However, the more important jing was that he now would do business with Citibank. Chase had lost its exclusivity. This included mark loans from me in Dusseldorf and the much bigger and more profitable aircraft leasing business with Citibank, New York. By mid-1969, Dusseldorf more profitable than Frankfurt. In the fall of 1969, almost a year after we had opened the branch, the National Bank Examiners, NBX, came from Washington to Dusseldorf to inspect my branch. It was a great success. At the end of a 2-week audit, their leader, Hugh Convey, wrote at the conclusion of his inspection report, "The appearance and conduct of the Citibank branch in Dusseldorf is a credit to the institution." Hugh Convey and his wife, Misty, became friends, and we continued our relationship years later in New York. It was customary in all Citibank branches to hold monthly officers' meetings to discuss all important issues that come forward. I decided to hold my monthly meetings at my house in Hosel over drinks and dinner. This was always a wet and happy event, where Ingrid always cooked a delicious dinner. The house had a wood burning fireplace, and on one occasion, she cooked an entire big ham over that fire. Initially, at the first meeting in December 1968, 1 month after the opening, there were only 4 of us, Maus, Kaiser, von Pauker, and me. A year later, that number had doubled. I preferred the much more relaxed atmosphere at my house over the obviously more formal atmosphere in the office. In fact, it happened often that one of the participants would bring up points or say something that he never would have mentioned in the standard office ambiance.
Family life in 1969. Ingrid got pregnant again and gave birth to our daughter Janine on February 2, 1970. To help with the growing family, and particularly Ralph and Janine, we hired so-called au pair girls from England. These are young ladies who come for 1 year to work in a family and to learn the language of the host country, in our case, German. We continued this practice later in the USA, where we had German girls who came to learn English. As I mentioned before, my mother had gotten married to Dr. Gerhard Gerd Müller. She moved to the city of Dortmund into his house, which had 2 additional apartments rented to tenants. Gerd had maintained his academic contacts with classmates and other friends who went to the same university. This social life introduced a new and different life for my mother.
In those and some other circles, she was now Frau Dr. Müller, as is customary to this day in Germany.